sit right back and you'll hear a tale, of a fateful trip.
In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain!
Nice shooting, Stan.
Why, thank you, John. Right on target, and down goes the HMS Beagle and Darwin and hopefully the theories about it as we talk on another Sink the Beagle. I'm Stan Hudson.
And I'm John Kurlinski. And we on Sink the Beagle take a lighthearted look at the serious issues of evolution and creation.
Because we're so serious.
And we have so much fun. And Stan, sometimes we just get tongue-tied because we're just talking about sex.
Sex. Oh, how fun is this?
Yeah.
Well, this is kind of part two of... We're not sure if this program exactly follows last week, but last week we did talk about the origins of sex. Why sex?
And one of the biggest conundrums other than the origin of life is sexuality Sink the Beagle questioners, too. We want to know. Why sex?
Well, again, the idea...
By evolutionists.
The problem for evolution is why sex in the sense of... You need a male and a female. Why that?
Because genetic code.
Yeah, simple life forms, if there is such a thing. There are some simple life forms that can just simply reproduce themselves like
asexually.
A Xerox machine. Yeah.
Yep. Clone, you know.
Yeah. And that is far more efficient than the idea of suddenly only handing off half your genes and needing another partner to fill in the gap.
And part of the problem, as stated by even evolutionists, is that when not only is sex doesn't make sense because of that, but they also have to confess the reality that sex occurs in almost all major groups of life.
Yep.
We're not talking just a few species.
Yeah.
Plants need it, everything. Yeah. Almost everything has sex.
Sex in it. And no question that it is still a challenge. As Mike Ridley said, it is still a puzzle. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that today,
yeah.
The puzzle.
And so why is this the case? Evolutionists, you know, they have been forced to concede that there has to be some sort of advantage to sex. Just what is that advantage?
Biology evolves with the idea of advantage. If there's a new trick thrown into the mix, there's got to be a reason for it.
And sex has to have a good reason because it's a big trick, man.
It's a trick.
Big trick, all right. And...
Yes.
So what do we do? What do we do, Stan?
What are some of the ideas that are coming this way? You know, evolution tries to explain a lot of things I can't help but talk about just briefly. Can I throw in why kissing?
Why kissing, Stan?
Why
sure.
Kissing, which leads to, you know, other things. Evolutionist answers to why kissing is what you are doing in the kissing act is searching for mate material, and you are seeing what kind of chemical balance we got here. We got some good chemicals here, and that's what you're tasting. We might say electricity or whatever. Chemistry.
Is there a spark there?
Chemistry's not right here.
Is there an acidic bite there or something? I can't help but what comes to my mind is that little old child riddle, Georgie Porgy Puddin' and Pie, kissed the girls and made them cry.
Oh.
Apparently he wasn't the right mate, though, because when the boys came out to play, Georgie Porgy ran away.
Georgie Porgy had real issues, you know what I'm saying?
Major issues.
Maybe he needed Listerine, I don't know.
Whatever. It sure would have helped, but the thing is kissing just a change of chemicals, and we're going to go around and start kissing everybody we can never find to see if they're the right
mate. Pardon me, but may I taste your chemicals, please?
Yes. That's a way to... opening line. I don't think that will get very far.
No, it won't.
We'll get you a slap in the face.
Let's take a look at some evolutionists that are trying to imagine why sex. For instance, there is the idea Lynn Margulis and Dorian Sagan have proposed a simple solution by suggesting that Mendelian inheritance, that's the idea of what we understand genetics to be, and sex were a historical accident, i.e. a kind of accidental holdover from the era of single-celled organisms. Now, basically, it's an accident that's hung on.
Hung on, yeah. And irony is that isn't all evolution just sort of accidents anyway? Things that were never intended coming about by the unintended, you know, what can you do with it?
What I like is they say that it's a question that leads to, quote, intellectual mischief and confusion.
Yes.
Which is another way of saying... when we don't know about this stuff, we really ought to shut up. Yeah, because we're saying a lot of stupid things on the subject.
And we're saying more and more stupid. And actually, over today and the next weeks to come, we're going to look at some of the stupid that's coming out.
You mean we're
going to
share more stupidity here on Sink the Beagle?
As we look at the stupidity of the answers of sex, you know, but they're looking for the advantageous nature of it, and that's part of what it is.
Well, this idea implies that sex is useless, and that's what they still don't understand. Why sex?
Yeah. And the overriding questions then are begged at how itself did this sexuality and reproduction evolve in the first place? Mm-hmm. Despite the speculation, they have to honestly admit, we don't know. Yep. That's their biggest...
We don't know. Hard to
say. And the reproduction creates complexities of the genome and the need for a separate mechanisms for providing the gametes in this process. Mm-hmm. The metabolic costs of maintaining the system of sexuality and reproduction is huge.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of energy the body puts into it, right?
Yeah, and body not
and
only
why?
In the reproductive part and why, and maintaining the organs.
All the organs, the special equipment necessary, right?
Yeah, and which equipment came first? Mm. You know, again, it raises more, each step raises more questions
and
than it
intellectual
answers.
Mischief, huh?
Yeah, and the advantages which they confess that J.F. Crowe lamented are not obvious.
The advantages of male and female versus just without it.
Yes,
you know,
they're not obvious for us to carry. A lot of baggage in all the way, every step of the way. So what is the purpose and how can evolution explain it? And it sort of how does it explain Ricky?
Yeah,
the old Lucy show. It's sort of the survivalist of the survival of the fittest mentality. You know, really struggles at this point. You know, the fittest then becomes who can carry off the most offspring, and then you have sort of the sexual competition. Mm-hmm. And they can understand a little bit of how Darwin could see the strongest male lion reducing and putting out the best, you know, offspring versus the weaker males. And,
right.
But when it actually comes back to the origin of it all, it doesn't make sense.
You know, the idea that we pass on genes. Remember, evolution is kind of predicated on the idea of man is nothing other than an animal with less hair or something. There's nothing in the image of God. There's nothing special about man. So if we're here, we might have bigger brains. We can think about things. We can be self-aware. But other than that, our purpose is still the same. You pass on genes. So why it is so complicated and complex, this is an interesting one, John. You know, they've done studies and evolution has tried to explain why is there infidelity sometimes in marriages. And remember, it's all about evolution, passing on your genes. So guys, that's no big question. It's simply, if I'm going to go after other women, it's to produce more genetic material, pass it on. That's not a question. But why would women do it? And here's an interesting thing. They say that women, this is from an evolutionist standpoint, a woman might dump an original sperm producer, baby maker, who is maybe a big hunk and make a strong kid and all this kind of stuff, and then dump that for a geek, I'm using more my interpretation, that would be a better provider.
Have a good job.
Have a nice job. Put that roof over the head and protect baby and mom and all that. So that's the idea, you know. Disloyalty has now an evolutionary standpoint.
Yes,
you know,
disloyalty has support. And what it does is divorces any kind of morality from the issue of sexuality and marriage.
It's all about passing on your genes.
It's all about having babies and passing the genes. And it's happening on a subconscious level. And so therefore, it's not really wrong that a woman dumps the hunk for the geek because, you know, the hunk is just going to get mad and start beating things up and breaking the furniture. The geek's going to get him into a gated community and they'll have nice cars and they'll be able to take him to all the events and the soccer lessons and
all that. So evolution at work, that's
evolution,
what that is.
And to never see it as trials and troubles in your neighborhood. No, actually, Stan, when they start going down this level, they started at asexual and there was no sense to ever go beyond asexual reproduction. But it did.
Right.
But
single-celled animals just simply reproducing themselves, chicking, with some kind of copy mechanism.
Yeah, but what happened is it did. And so really what has happened over time is that they have developed what they have. And when you do a literature search of how and why sex, you really discover four different and often contradictory theories or hypotheses as to why sexuality came about.
Okay.
And we're not going to get into them all today. We'll save that for even next week. But it's interesting just to notice the names they give them.
What are the four?
The first one they're calling the lottery principle.
Lottery?
The second one is called the tangled bank hypothesis. That's actually quite interesting to me and fascinating.
Okay.
The Red Queen hypothesis.
I like the names of these, man.
You know, and the DNA repair hypothesis, and two of them sort of have this gambling undertone. The Red Queen, you know, why not the Black Queen? Why not clubs or spades? You know, it's either hearts or diamonds, but is it hearts or is it diamonds? Is it love or money? Why is there sex? I don't know if that's the angle. But they take all these different categories, and they have four, and they're contradictory, and there's nothing really good, and it goes back to that phrase you said, that gentleman said, that it kind of, we should just shut up sometimes and we don't really know what's going on.
Intellectual mischief.
Let's open up our mouths and see what falls out. You know, and this is what does. And really, when you divorce sexuality from morality and God, you sort of are just sort of saying, well, it must be working together for some sort of good. It has to have some sort of advantage, and that's why it developed, because we're here now, and it's so pervasive a method, there must be something good in it. And yet, how do all these things really work? We don't know. But Christians, we do have kind of a spiritual takeoff. We like to do a torpedo text on it. When we look at how things work, are things really working together for good?
Is there purpose?
Is there purpose? Because sex sure seems purposeless other than producing babies.
Yeah.
And how it ever evolved in the first place makes no sense. We believe there is a heavenly purpose, though, and we have it in a torpedo text.
From Romans 8, chapter 8, verse 28, it says, "And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose."
And that's a general statement and principle of how God is involved in every detail of our lives. And sexuality isn't sort of an accident as it was first described.
A purposeless thing.
A purposeless accident that somehow is a holdover from a single-celled existence, as they're trying to claim. Sexuality is very much wired in who we were made to be by an infinite God of love and goodness.
A God that made Adam and Eve naked originally on day 6 of creation and pronounced them good.
And unashamed. Mm-hmm. And they relished in his fellowship and in his love and in his light, and they had a wonderful place to live, and there was no
broken
home.
They loved each other. They loved each other and were unashamed in the nakedness and in the relationship that God created for them to have. Sex has a purpose. It is not purposeless. It is not an accident of long chance events over millions and billions of years.
And it's involving two people in a relationship, and actually a covenant relationship, because out of that comes marriage. Marriage is the covenant that binds the man and the woman together spiritually with God and with each other. And it's from that relationship and that commitment they then connect.
And studies show, John, that those who have the best and happiest sex lives are those that are in a committed marriage with their loving partner.
Yes.
That they have the highest satisfaction rates of sex. You wouldn't think so watching TV.
No. It's always out of marriage. It's always with a stranger. It's always a quickie in the closet at work or something
it
stupid like
the,
that.
It adds to the excitement or some such thing, I guess.
And the reality is that people are most satisfied and least ashamed when they love each other and they're in a faithful marriage. And we hope that—
Just like God designed.
And that is the ideal. And fortunately, we live in a perverse world where that is now mocked as something like,
yesterday. Is targeting it, no question about it.
Well, we will invite you to listen to more sex on Sink the Beagle next time. So tune in again, and we'll talk about the four ideas that science suggests.
On Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friend. You're sure to get a smile. From 7 stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.